Hey, Christy and Katrina here at the DK805 podcast. On our last conversation, we talked about the similarities and how we connected. One of the challenges that I have currently in my life is the current court case. Sometimes that just keeps me up at night and I replay a million and one different questions, like how did I get here? How did a mom just end up with a life? I'm living a life I never imagined. And so that by itself, I struggle with. I have the insomnia. When I walk through the courthouse, it creates so much sadness in me to see how many people are incarcerated. And I start to make up stories in my head. Was it an addiction? What was it? What caused all these people to become incarcerated? And how does that happen? And how...
Christy, I listen to you and I watch you, and since meeting and hearing what you must endure every day with the grief journey, are you able to heal and during this process? And how can I... And I just feel like I just want to be like, you know, how can I help you? You know, it's 3 years for me. This just being a year where you are just still living this with this. I don't have anyone that I can.
Well,
you know,
I wonder if it's a different type of closure.
Yeah.
Katrina,
yeah.
Is because with you, there is no closure in the not knowing.
Yes.
Yet for me, there is somewhat of... I don't know what to call it. I can't put a word on it.
Yeah.
But I just think of what creates such adversity in somebody's life that they don't have honor for another person's life. How did I get here?
I think that's why we're here, because it is what's bringing us together, is that there, you know, you're seeing this in real time, what's really happening. You're seeing this person that I don't have that visual of. I don't know where my son got his last time with the fentanyl. Bringing it around to like our time together, what we can hopefully just your tools, like for like, how do you get through like the end of like a court day and processing, and that you're hearing his name all, you know, I want people to talk about Dylan all the time. I always just say,
and
people
do
don't not
that.
Talk about Dylan, like keep him. I always say, you know, I talked to him in the car. If someone doesn't talk about it, I feel a little bit more like you're hearing his name all the time. But
and one of the things that, since we have the connection that we do have, we are able to actively say Devin,
yes,
or Dylan.
Yes.
And that keeps them alive. But I do have somewhat of apprehension when the court case is over.
Of
is
course.
That when my grief starts? Because in my head, Devin is still alive.
Yeah.
Because I do have that opportunity.
I feel like maybe he's coming down a little bit, like we talked about this. Their love for us and our love for them, and he like wants you to be healing during this process, so it's not some, you know, like at the end of the trial.
Well, I do write, like when I have those heavy days, when I leave the courthouse and I have those heavy days.
Yeah.
I go back to Devin's early childhood.
Yeah.
And I look at all the things I did right.
Yeah.
Because when you're a parent and you've lost your child to addiction,
the beautiful photos.
Well, it's easy to get lost in that rabbit hole of everything I did wrong. What could I have done different? Why my child? But like I told you, that therapist told me one time, because I had gone through therapy throughout Devin's journey, and we went together, and I remember crying inside the counseling office, saying, "Why me? I don't deserve this." And the therapist was so adamant. He looked straight at me and he said, "Why not you? What makes you think you're so special? Why not you?" And again, I was angry.
I felt harsh. Yeah, that felt really, it feels harsh for me as a mom to hear that, because when I, you know, the most loving thing that, you know, you did for me was so such a difference from that. Like, but that's a therapy type word, you know, like, you know, sort of giving you this, turning it around the conversation, because we kind of tend to, you know, beat ourselves up inside, and that was sort of like to stop that motion, right? But I do like to, it's like I was doing all that myself, and I had to relearn how to just softer speak and just be kinder to myself. And it was more, but that kindness, let's go back into that, where it was more what we talked about, how we
have
can,
to learn to be kind right, to ourselves right, and forgive ourselves.
Right. We're the hardest on ourselves.
We yeah. are the hardest. And for any parent out there, because often mm-hmm. it's often the moms get a lot of attention, but there's a lot of dads out there as well. And I'm sure that they beat themselves up as well. And even though that therapist did say, well, Christy, mm-hmm. why not you? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I was so special not to have adversity in my life, but through adversity is where I've learned to gain strength. And through the adversity is where I don't want my other children to right. lose their mom as
right.
well.
Right.
And so in that, I sometimes look at what example can right. I be to my other children, because they don't have the same mom. When right. Devin died, part of me died.
100%.
So
and it's a forever changed. I'm still a mom, but that came up often too. Just I had, you know, finding myself again in this journey. But it is there's this awful deep loss, the grief, the journey. But through it, I have this other strength that's developing, and just the that I do believe is who I'm supposed to be, helping other people be, you know, like I said, I'm always kinder. I'm able to be kind to anyone but myself, and that's what I'm trying to maybe just express. If anyone, you know, is not feeling that you're not being giving yourself the kindness, that would be number for me. Just give yourself the love that you'd for sure give to anyone else. And you'd never look at another mother that's lost and say what we say to ourselves. And it is, this is such a hard journey. The journey through the addiction to where we are now. What I have found, the tools that have, you know, that enable me to sit here and even speak about it. I want to hear Dylan's name all the time. I've told people, just talk about him. Don't not talk about him. Let's talk about all the beautiful things, his skateboarding. Let's watch his videos. Let's listen to his music.
Well, and there's a balance between that.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about Devin all of the time as well. But sometimes am I talking about Devin, it does make other people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because one of the painful statements, like if I... Something I know now that I didn't know before was when people say, you just have to get over it. Now when somebody says, get over it, it's like a trigger. I'm like, what do you mean, get over it?
I'd rather it be
let's get through this. Yeah. Let's get through this together, because you're not going to get over the loss of Dylan any more than I'll get over the loss of Devin. They live within us.
I've had to, with people, my soul people, my immediate family and friends, just share with them. The wording hurts, and verbiage is really important, how they say something, because they don't mean to say. I've had my brother, who's just so close to me, and he would never intentionally ever hurt me, and he's like, please teach me, tell me how to say it, because I don't mean like get over it. He's never said that in that wording, but it has been, in a way, it makes me feel like I can't rush through this journey. I know you want me better. I know you want me to, but I'm still in this. This is where I'll be until I'm in this next space. But, and he just says, just talk to me in that way. Like, you know, you're teaching me. They don't know. They're not feeling what we're feeling every day. So it's like they just want us to be better.
Absolutely. And I know that I sometimes still get this question often to me. And when people ask about the court case, they question me. Like, why is it a murder case? Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't it be a murder case? So they downplay the fact that it is indeed a murder case, but somehow it shouldn't be, because Devin used.
At the same
time.
And
it wasn't a choice. Yeah. People think that it's a choice.
This is to set precedent for it being that it, what it needs to be, a fear factor for someone that, you know, would consider having these, the amount that I know, which it was in this with this awful case. And I'm just so sorry you are in this, but there's so many people that, these laws need to be changed. That does need to look at like the highest risk. Don't ever do it as selling drugs. It's taken it to, it's just a death sentence for anyone that's, doing that. And it just takes away that chance for rehab, that chance for, the family to heal. And it's a poison, and there, it's, so you know, yeah, I just can't well, even process what you are going through. I know that's so hard.
One of the other things that I look at often is I don't know anything about the individual that sold Devin the drugs. I don't know anything other than what's already been publicized in the papers.
Right. But, you know, you've also shared, and that's what I kind of just went backwards. I get lost in my thought, but I wanted to share that, you know, you have shared, and I've heard you say it, you have compassion for even just her family.
That's what I was going to say.
And what she goes through, how she got where she was, you know, what got her there.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And as a mom of a child
who struggled, like my Dell,
I'm not responsible for a lot of Devin's behaviors.
Right.
But there still is a judgment on the family. And sometimes I feel myself defending like, hey, I'm innocent. I've done nothing.
Right.
Yet there's the judgment of from people who don't have addicts. You need to do this. You need to do that.
You just said it, though, from people that don't have that experience, that don't have that painful journey that they've they're watching their loved ones that they can't get the help for, they won't go into treatment, it's all of this, they don't have any concept. And so it's maybe how we can just spread the awareness of what it feels like to be that like person that when you do find out that someone you know is going through that, someone you care about, just understand that this is, while in active addiction, it's nothing to be ashamed about. I didn't talk about it with very few people. I had very few people that I felt, because if I revealed that of what Dylan was struggling with, it was just dirty. And it was, I look back now and I go, I regret that deeply because I didn't allow a large enough community to help me.
Well, on the flip side, I would share because I wanted to educate everybody.
Yeah.
I wanted Devin to have support and I would beg people.
Yeah.
To invite Devin places, and from a very trusted person, somebody that I deeply love.
Yes.
One of the most painful statements that I've heard in my journey was, your child's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I reacted to that, that my child's a problem, maybe your thinking is a problem.
I feel like I took Dylan and just sort of, it was just he and I then, because it was just, you know, I was a single mom when I, you know, just having him, and just, it was always just Dylan and mom, and, you know, his dad wasn't, not a part, he was a huge part of his life, but when he moved away, this became like Dylan and I in his active addiction, so it would be like, we would go and do these things together. Like I became the support, the daily, the walks on the beach, let's get it together, let's hike, let's go do. And I just felt in my love for him, what could heal him. Yeah.
And I often wonder as well, even as a young child, Devin exhibited anxiety, and often what people are judging, they don't understand.
Right.
When Devin was 8 years old, my sister was diagnosed with cancer, and then she died 4 years later, a year after my sister. Yeah, trauma. A year after my sister passed away, Devin's dad was diagnosed with a cancer that he was told he wasn't supposed to survive.
Yeah.
So from 8 years old, 8 years old on, Devin was facing mortality, which is, that's hard.
That just really just like goes right into where I was, you know, wanting to go with for the trauma. I wanted to speak on that. That is Dylan with his trauma, and I do believe that, you know, if not all, almost all, but if not all, addiction starts with some trauma for them, whatever that level is. Dylan, you know, had suicide in his family, his grandparents, and so that just these hits that were like, and a loss of girlfriend, we talked about that, where that, you know, and feeling lonely and then being that age, and then we'll just start into it, like Dylan, it was the worst time was COVID, and then having that be where people were really just really lost, and a lot of mental health issues came from that.
A lot of mental health issues.
Parents felt really lost. I know that we couldn't get Dylan into certain rehabs at that time for without being vaccinated. He didn't want to be vaccinated. All the things, you go back and you think, what would I have done differently? I know now.
Now, inside the rooms of recovery, when I would go to some of the meetings, there was a joke that they would say that the stimulus checks, they were good for stimulants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they would laugh about it, but that when you take support away from people and give them money, that's not a good combination.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a very difficult time for all of society.
Mm-hmm. And the checks were just, it was, I know.
And Devin's last writings, one of the last things Devin said is that the, I hope I quote this correctly, if you're in the recovery community, I'm sorry, I'm having, I call it grief brain.
Grief brain.
But
mm-hmm.
connection is, what, quote it for me. Connection is what is required.
I'm having a hard time remembering. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm going to quote that on their next podcast. I'm going to go back and read his writing.
Because
I can't remember it.
His writing would be powerful to
his
just share that. Because
they were powerful.
They both had profound things to say. Looking back, it was almost like messages, and they were, and maybe that's what this is, you know, heading towards, where we were able to share through them, through their journey, what they gave us, and what they gave us in our connection, in our meeting, their empathy and compassion. Dylan would sit with people all the time, and he wouldn't take care of himself, but he'd be really, really, really,
Devin
really adamant about helping
first,
other people.
The very first to help out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have some writings of Devin, too, where he was sending me a text message, mm-hmm. and he was going out just one day because mm-hmm. there's a homeless guy and he wanted to bring him. He gave him the jacket a brand new jacket.
Yep.
I just bought Devin, and he's like, but Mom, don't be mad. The homeless guy
needed it more than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd say, where'd that skateboard go? Where did that phone go? And it was, you know, sometimes they were taken or lost.
Or sold.
The journey or sold. That's the truth. Those are the honesties.
Yeah, that's the messy part about addiction.
Those are the messy parts, for sure. And then there was the, you know, me coming across my beautiful son, and he's got his jacket across a young girl sitting, and his team just would sit with people and talk, and he was a giver, and but not to himself at the times.
And one of the things that was beautiful about the journey of recovery,
yes,
was every time they went to rehab, there was that hope. It was the...
Yes, every time. I would just go, oh my gosh, this is the time. Or that was, you know, so many times. And just hearing that voice on the other end of the phone that made it like, this is the, you know, they're going to give, they have all the tools. And I was like, I was in. I just knew it. That was the time.
Well, and I would sometimes, there are people who have.
Yes.
Who have recovered. And I look at them and I would never want them not to have their recovery. But I sometimes have the sadness that wasn't my son's journey.
Of course.
I don't know the answer why people recover, why others don't. Devin had support. He had a loving family. Yeah. And I often wonder about...
Both our boys did.
But there's so many people that don't have support. Yeah. And that's where, as a community, we need to look at addiction differently.
And I think that's a really big discussion, for sure, because there's so many people that just will stay hard and strong on like what their boundaries or their tough love or those different techniques. And you know, I think we do best we can in the time. And that's I kind of go back into that. I'm like, I did the best I could in the time.
Oh, absolutely. I used to, I was the mom that if I had had the answer, he would be here. Right. And I remember when Devin was in his early stages of addiction, I would be the mom that would knock on his friends' doors and I would say, please, please don't party with Devin. We have a history of addiction. Mm-hmm. He isn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know your history, but mm-hmm. Devin's family has a history of addiction.
Yeah, that's a component for sure.
Well, it's hard to convince a group of 15-year-old boys.
Yeah, no. That's just it.
Regardless of who he was partying with, that he was at risk. I knew he was at risk when he was probably 8 years old, and I could tell he had an addiction to, what was that where they used to feed their pets on the computer?
Mm.
I forget. I'm having problems remembering today.
The
neuroses at a young age, and I could see it developing.
Sure.
But even within my family unit, I remember telling my sisters, please don't bring pot around my house.
Right.
Pot. That's why I just aged myself, right?
Well,
it's called weed now.
So now I'm just going to remind myself, too. For me, it was a very normalized thing. Pot was, you know, I had hippie parents. it was pot for me. The hippie parents, that whole thing, it was like that was the lesser of. So even just that, like knowing now, how strong it is and how synthetic and all those things that were, you know, Dylan, you know, he, when COVID was happening, going back to that, you know, I who have access now to all of what he, you know, his purchasing and things. The things that I asked for permission. I just said, Dylan, we linked our accounts at some account, and it was delivered weed, from the the cannabis places. And it, you know, it was like COVID, everything shut down. He couldn't go to church, but not that he would, but I wanted him to. But no, it was he could get weed delivered.
Well, when Devin was 14 years old, and I was the parent that wanted to make sure Devin's tests were clean.
Yeah.
So he's a minor. These are two incidents I had, and these are real.
Yeah.
At 14 years old, I took Devin to the doctors, and I said, I want a drug panel on him. The doctor told me, in front of Devin, due to the HIPAA law, at 14 years old, I did not have a right to see that drug panel. Another time, when Devin was 17 years old, he took a bus to the hospital. And he said he was having an anxiety attack, which he probably was, right, because he had anxiety. Right. 17 years old,
untreated.
They handed the child a prescription of Xanax. And I called the hospital as an irate parent out of town and told them, he has a history of addiction and you just gave him a prescription of Xanax.
Yeah. I know those things have changed now. Because that's very,
of course,
you know,
and
doctors
was,
know now that, even just the kid falls on a skateboard. Sorry to interrupt that. That was a beautiful connection too. Like, does it start with an injury? Because Dylan was given, you know, he broke his arm and he broke his, you know, leg during different skate. So the opioid thing, but it wasn't his thing that was his drug of choice. Does that make sense?
Sometimes.
Did it trigger? What came first, the mental component or the genetic?
Well, with the Devin, I always felt like I was running backwards. There was some points where I would call the police officers and I'd want
someone
intervention.
To help. Yes.
And then towards the end of Devin's illness, I was running from the cops.
Exactly.
I didn't know which way to go.
Right, because
important.
Their minds weren't thinking right. And at that point, it was scary for them to be in the places their mindset. Yeah.
Right. And it was, we do need, we do need police officers. They need to be part of society, but
their hands need to be more together, like the mental health care and working with that more knowledge within that. And I, you know, that's that, because
right.
This is just,
and I am forever grateful for the investigation regarding the current court case. And I am indebted to the officers who were there for me that day. So I don't want this podcast to come across anyway. I have never broken the law. And so I want to make that very clear.
I always had very, very, even though it was scary for Dylan to have that time frame when we were like, you know, this has gotten so scary that we're going to call to protect you. You know, the police, they were just so much kindness coming from, in terms, they don't always know, they don't know what to do. They're kind of like, you've called us, what can we do? So yes,
and they're limited by their
limited
by the laws as well. So
they have children, and they
it goes back to what if I knew what I knew, if I knew what I know now, what would I do different?
So what are you doing now for your, like, can you know, like you said you're writing, and then I know I find that just to be so healing, and you know, a lot of prayer, but just,
well,
to,
one of my coping mechanisms is I always read. Yeah. I'm an avid reader, and I go back to the fact that I do have younger children. They're not younger. I have all my children are adults, but I have children, other children, and I don't want them to lose their mom.
Staying calm in your
I try to stay calm. I'm very logical. I try not to operate out of emotions, because one of the things with Devin early on, I was an emotional mom, and now I'm very logical.
Yeah.
I'm like, does it make sense? I did put Devin in dirty rehabs. They have been shut down. Devin was body brokered. Any story that could happen to an addict has happened.
Yeah, things I know now. The vetting of the, you know, there are vetted sober livings. These are, you know, of course, you know, it doesn't have to cost more money. You can find, it's again, these are things I didn't know. Make sure they're vetted. having it be, you know, that you're just that communication, having a community where there's like maybe like a web page that we like develop of in the local area. These are vetted. These have been where, you know, they're not being, you know, there's what we talked about. Like and it isn't like a, you know, in and out for a revolving door.
Right. You know, in a lot of ways,
there's
I
a
feel
lot
like,
of beautiful people that want to help.
Oh,
and they're, and they're,
so
and
many
they're
beautiful
for the right
people.
Time, you know, but it is so much of it is like not knowing at what where to turn to. You'll turn anywhere.
Well, and in early addiction, as parents, all you want is to save your
That's
child.
It. Yeah, and, you and anyone want, sounds
and
right.
Anyone sounds right, and so many are very... Yeah.
So vetted sober livings, vetted rehabs, community sources, you know, a parent
And take
parent
a pause.
Group, take a pause.
Take a pause.
Take a pause and, you know...
Be
in
logical,
that,
not
right.
emotional.
Exactly. Yeah, that reactive... I have to always work on that because I'm really just like, you know, what am I to learn in this right now? What can I take from this right now?
It's almost that knee-jerk reaction when the boys were 3 years old and they'd run out in the street and you'd grab the back of their neck to keep them safe.
Yep.
I was trying to do that same thing with his addiction, but not all sober living homes are safe.
Mm-mm. That's Yeah, another topic for sure, but
and
a big one.
That's one of the things.
It's where they
I've...
can find drugs they were never even taking before. It's where they can. It's all opens up this Pandora's box, and
well,
you think you're doing the right thing.
Addictions are currency, right?
Yeah.
And if you have good insurance, sometimes they seek you out.
And I can tell you, though, I have friends that have, you know, gone this journey that I've met through this process that have, you know, their children have recovered. And it's a hard, recovery is so, you know, that's work. That's the work. So even though they're recovered and I've shared with other moms, you know, I always say, it's not the worst as, because you're looking at me. I don't want them to be fearful that their child, but like Salvation Army, Faith Based, these ones are free. And they have found recovery in those places.
Well, one of the things I've heard is
when they're ready. That's it.
It doesn't matter what rehab goes. It
doesn't matter how fast we grind it. It's when they're ready.
When they're ready. You can be in a room full of people using, but when they're ready, they're done.
They're done.
And that's one of the last things, you know, Devin and I talked about before he passed away was, aren't you tired, Devin? Yeah. Aren't you tired? One of the last things I... told him, I said, don't quit on me, Devin, please don't quit on me. Mm-hmm. And the night before he passed away, he said, Mom, I'm not giving up.
No, and that's the poison of the fentanyl. And the new blendings of it, as if there needed to be a stronger, they added in things like the tranquilizers and make it, it's just designed, designed for death.
And reaching the community, reaching the younger generation is that it's dangerous. Those streets are so dangerous.
They are.
And that's where, as a society, we need to stop teaching that fun equals a beer in hand. Fun equals let's go get stoned.
Right, right. I don't know that that's so much the teaching. I think it's more that's that age. It's that invincibility. It's that like going, you got to almost grow through it
true.
To get through it. And like, it's like, I say a million times, like, I just knew my deal would get like, I thought he'd be like, okay, let's try it again. You know,
sometimes
but it was
I
like
can
one
still,
more time.
Yeah.
That's why I get so angry at the poison, because it's like, my dad said something one time. He said, this isn't the hippie era where it was like, you know, there's creative things coming out of getting stoned, or there's music and there's some beautiful music we can all think of, like, and people will be like, well, why are you upset at that? We're upset at the poison, because the music that people say came out of the hippie to all the, you know, maybe the, this is a loose conversation about it, but like, there's just that thinking that people have in their mind, but like, we're trying to condemn all, you know, of course, absolutely condemn all of that, but it's more about that this is a poison that's out there. Awareness needs to happen, because the one more time is not possible.
And this is why it's important for us to have these conversations, because it gives us an opportunity to think different. Sometimes I'm still looking for the blame.
Yeah.
Like, who do I blame?
Right.
And there is no blame. It may not be a teaching. And so we have so many topics to discuss, so many different areas.
I'm so grateful that we can have this time and share, and hopefully anything that we're going through is going to be able to help someone else.
Absolutely. So please don't forget to reach out to us at DK805 Podcast. Thank you for the time, and I so look forward to having many more discussions with you, Katrina.
All my love for you, Christy.
To infinity and beyond.
Yeah. It's not your fault.
It's not your fault either.
Okay.